Okay, so this is Stratford Part 2, 2nd March 2013, and I've chanced upon a walk, and in the boo before you would have heard us joining this walking tour, and the guy who's doing the tour is Shakespeare, basically telling us about Stratford and the history pertaining to Stratford, the surrounding areas, and of course himself. And now he's talking about Midsummer Night's Dream. And we're down on the main sort of park area of Stratford, down by the riverside, walking up to some statues.
Huh?
You are? Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's kind of spending half his time walking backwards so that he can project his voice back to the crowd, which is quite impressive. There you can hear the lock. It's over there. We'll come and hear some of that later. But this is me and my serendipitous kind of look. Visit. We didn't know coming here until this morning, and this is what we're ending up with. Yeah, yeah. And there's about 100 people on this walk that have kind of joined. So it's gonna, as I said before, having the pied piper effect. But yeah, just thought we'd give you an idea of what's been going on. If you haven't listened to the previous boo, do feel free to go back and listen to it. But here you have the man, Shakespeare.
Yeah, look through the water. Watch where you're going.
Oh, not too bad for a dead man. Surprisingly warm.
Surprisingly dead.
Right, we're going down here, so do watch people. No falling back, some terrible
Huh? Do you want on the other steps? It's all the way.
That's fine.
You said? Well, it is, because on the other steps.
I didn't realise.
No, I can't. I didn't know. Red shanty.
Trying to catch up with him now.
In fact, there's one man I do believe I know who did come to Stratford today and see the statues. But does anyone here come into Stratford this way and see these statues? No. Excellent, good, true to form. Well, there are loads of statues here because this is the main road into Stratford. Every single tourist who comes to Stratford will see these wonderful statues. And yeah, 95% of people who come in never see them. So it's been a while walking past this way. But I'd like to tell you a little bit about some of my work. Good afternoon, how are you? Well, nice day today, isn't it?
So now Shakespeare is talking to all the youth and freaking them out. Spaniola. So now we're back by this. You go around South Texas if you want.
No, I've done all these.
Oh, yeah, of course. So if you go in front, I can actually see you.
Sir John himself. Right, here we are. Now then, this of course is Sir John Falstaff. Now, no one pleased the crowds as much as this fat fellow. But, well, in fact, Queen Elizabeth I told me that he was her favourite character. In fact, she loved him so much that after she'd seen him in Henry IV Part 2, she absolutely insisted that I write a play in which Sir John falls in love. And, well, that was the inspiration for The Merry Wives of Windsor, in case anybody was wondering. But no one pleased the crowds so much as Falstaff. But presumably, some of the credit should probably go to our acting company's clown, Will Kemp, who used to play Falstaff. You see, he was a very talented actor. He had a talent for improvisation. But that was the problem, you see. He never picked up the script. And if you don't give them the script, you'll annoy the writer and he'll write you out. And of course, that's what I did. Because in Henry IV Part 2, I promise a return of Sir John Falstaff in Henry V. But for those of you who know Henry V, you might realise that in Henry V, Sir John Falstaff dies. Wait for it. Off stage. Yes, that showed the scene stealing hand, didn't it? Actually, after I'd fired him, he decided he was going to revitalise his fortunes by, you might say, a bit of a publicity stunt. He decided to dance a jig, Horace dance, from London to Norwich in 9 days. And he wrote a pamphlet about it or something, but actually in my research I've discovered that he didn't actually do it in 9 days. He did it in 27 days and claimed he did it in 9 as the publicity stunt. But it didn't really work, and he died in poverty. So I do like a happy ending. But anyway, I'll tell you a little bit about the chap on the other side as well, just over here. Now, this is young Prince Hal, straight across. And this, of course, is Henry V, as he was as a young boy. Now, I didn't make these statues. I didn't design them. In fact, I had absolutely nothing to do with them. But this is arguably one of the greatest kings of England. But look at him. King of England? Queen of England, maybe. Yeah, there is a little bit of a campsite about this statue, but yeah, look at the way his trousers are hanging low like that. Oh, you know, I've seen so many young people with their trousers hanging down here. I think you call them emos or hoodies or something. Still, I suppose you could say, in his younger days, young Prince Hal certainly was a bit of a hoodie. I mean, well, certainly he was a rogue, and when I'd been about his age, I'd been a bit of a rogue myself. As a teenager, I'd read a book called Holinshed's Chronicles, which talks about the life of young Prince Hal. And yeah, he was such an inspirational character for a young man. Although, funnily enough, it was Holinshed's second edition 10 years later I used to write my history plays. But yeah, I could identify with him greatly when I'd been about the same age as him, about 18, because I'd been a bit of a rebel myself. I'd been caught poaching on the local squire's land, Squire Thomas Lucy. And, well, I thought the whole thing was hilarious, but he didn't think it was very funny at all. And he called the authorities on me. So I had to, the young lady gave me a wonderful expression the other day. Do a runner. Yes. And I made myself scarce. And there was an acting troupe passing through the town. And they were one man short, as one of their actors had left to marry a local girl. So as I could read and write, and I didn't fancy a proper job, you might say, I thought I'd try my hand at acting. But, of course, it was while I was working with the Lord Chamberlain's men in London that I discovered my true talent with a quill. But, of course, it wasn't just Squire Thomas Lucy that was annoyed at me running away. There was, of course, also my wife. Yes, indeed. And, well, funnily enough, she is on the other side here. So if you'd like to follow me across, directly across, I will introduce you. But I will warn you, she doesn't say much. Attention, you might remember that my first daughter Susanna was born 6 months after I got married to my wife. Actually, did anyone want to hazard a guess as to how old we were when we got married? I always like to ask. Anyone got a clue? How old was I?
15.
I was a little bit older than that. I was actually 18 when I got married. Yeah. And what about my wife? How old do you think she was? 26? Yes, sir. Correct. She was indeed 26, so there was a little bit of an age difference. But as I said, we didn't think that mattered, what with Susanna being on the way. And I actually remember just after Susanna was born, I'd taken a little break during the pregnancy, and I got back to writing. and I'd knocked some ink down my front, and my wife has been rather kind in cleaning the stain. And she was scrubbing away, and do you know what she said? Exactly right, sir. Out damn spot is what she said. And I love the emotion in her voice. It's such a boring task, and the way the words tripped off the tongue. When I was writing my domineering character of Lady Macbeth, I thought to myself, here is the opportunity to use those words. So I did. As I say, we did have to get married in rather a hurry. And the local Worcestershire Chancellor allowed us the grace of having the wedding bands read only once, rather than the usual three times, which meant that there was only 1 week to wait between the announcement of the marriage and the marriage itself, which was rather advantageous, as we wanted to be married before the child was born. Well, I mean, I suppose that's what Anne said, anyway. yes, I suppose you could say Anne Hathaway had her way. I know, the rhyme didn't work quite at the time either, but never mind. But, anyway, I'll tell you what. I'll take you over to the chap over here, sitting down. This, of course, is my tragic hero, Hamlet. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio. Now, I'll take you over and tell you a little bit about him, because, of course, my character of Hamlet was named after my son, Hamnut, with an N, not an L. And Hamnut, my son, was actually named after our neighbour, Hamnut Sadler. And, now he was quite a character as well. I'd drink with Hamnut Sadler of an evening. Oh, I might suggest one or two of you might want to, yes, you get the idea, wait on the path. You'll be quite all right there, sir. Now then, yeah, you chaps will be fine just there. But, as I was saying, Hamlet Sadler, we used to drink occasionally, a bit of gambling. But I remember when I died, I left Hamlet Sadler 26 shillings and eightpence, so he could buy himself a ring. He was rather fond of jewellery, but, does anyone know anything about my son at all? Sorry? Yes, he did indeed, sir. Do you know how old he was when he died?
11.
Yes, correct. Yes, indeed. The fountain of knowledge. But, he was. Unfortunately, he was 11 years old when he passed away. It was plague. Now, I was in London when I heard about my son's illness, and it takes 2 days to travel from Stratford to London to get a message, and, of course, another 2 days to return. So it was 4 days after I learned about my son's illness that I arrived back in Stratford. And unfortunately, he passed away. But I think it's an irony that only a writer can produce. That after the death of my only son, I actually wrote some of my finest comedies. The Merry Wives of Windsor, Much Ado About Nothing, and As You Like It were all written just after the death of my son. But I think it was into the play King John that I poured most of my family's grief. You see, in King John I talk about a mother who's just lost her child, and she's so overcome with grief, she actually contemplates suicide. And she says, "Grief now fills up the room of my absent child." That was exactly how I felt at the time. And I can assure you, my only smiles in those years were on the pages of those comedies. I never had another son after Hamlet. I think the closest thing I had to a son was probably my godson in Oxford, William Davenant, but I'll tell you a bit more about him later on. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. Each man in his life plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. It's a shame my son never made it to the third act. Still, you'd have thought they'd have got his name right. Yeah. If anyone actually is wondering about the name, why it is Hamlet, not Hamnut, there are various theories, and one of them is put down to a misprint in the first folio. So, no one's perfect, are they, really? Still. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting a bit depressing. We're talking about death and nothing. It's a lovely day. Maybe I'll take you over to the Royal Shakespeare Company, tell you a little bit about my heyday at the Globe Theatre. Sounds a bit more cheerful. I'm going to go down the bank onto the path, and we're going to go that way. So, I don't fancy the bank in these shoes, so I'm going to go through you chaps and round and down the steps. Are you coming this way as well?
Yeah, probably wise.
I'm going to say the bank is a lot slipperier than it looks. Believe me, I know from experience.
Come on, Lou.
Edward Allen while you were there. He was the leading actor at the Rose. Oh, right. When were we back?
You can just hear some people on the river there. There's a boat going down, a little rowing boat. And so now we're heading over to the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, the Royal Shakespeare Company Theatre. And basically, we'll see what he says about that, because there should be some history. I've recently done it up, as I said earlier. Yeah.
He's got a background. The man himself, and I've written that King Henry arrives at Cardinal Wolsey's house and he dances a little jig. And I thought it'd be rather fun to request for ever more spectacular special effects. Afternoon, how are you? Loud flourish of instruments and spray of live cannon. Unfortunately, it was a bit more spectacular than I expected. Because a little piece of the burning paper from the cannon got lodged in the thatch and the whole building burned down in minutes like matchwood. Not very good, but amazingly, nobody's killed in the fire.
That one was better.
There was one casualty of the evening.
We're just going over the river again on the river bridge. Not sure how much we'll hear of him here, but he's got traffic.
The letter was at a stage from a friend telling me about a gentleman who's sitting on a first round. And he's watching the play, and he's rather engrossed. And he hadn't really noticed that the ceiling was on fire.
Yeah.
I should hasten to add he'd had a few as well.
Yeah.
Suddenly, a flash fell from the ceiling, and I apologise, gentlemen, it landed right here.
So the building caught fire. The bloke was up watching the play, fell down into the crowd.
The first thing I would have done, which was put it out using my beer. No, that would just be a silly thing to do. Need beer for later on. So no, he actually took the time and effort to lean across and put it out. Using his neighbour's beer. And that's a true story, it was the only casualty of the evening. One man freaking
not coming into like a big square with shops all around, like Coluccio's, various gift shops and coffee shops. I mean, this is the first real clear day I've had since the winter, so it's a lovely sunny day.
What do you think of the building? I mean, be honest, I honestly don't mind, it's not my building, you can love it or hate it. What do you think?
Like it?
No, sorry. Ugly? Right, yeah. Some people love it, some people hate it.
So it's been totally renovated, so that's why people are looking for.
Some people used to call it the Jam Factory before the refurbishment. Now with the tower, they started calling it the fire station. See that one?
Yeah.
Or as actually two ladies I've heard recently describe it, which I think is a little bit harsh, as the crematorium. But
you can see what
they're on about. It's actually an observation tower.
You can go up that, can you? Yeah. I bet you can.
I should also say, you probably noticed I've got a bit of a habit of walking backwards when I'm talking to my group as well. I'm going to put a fire on me.
You could, now last an inhaler, a loud inhaler.
They had all of this up and they were doing all sorts of road works, this, that and the other. And I was walking back, I had no idea, and suddenly everyone went, and I fell down a hole.
Shakespeare fell down a hole, apparently, when they were renovating this place. Because it was probably 2 or 3 years renovation.
We'll be delighted to know. You'll have a sit down in a moment.
Let's get the taste of the coffee shop, you know what it's like.
Hey Pete, I think he's on Twitter.
Shakespeare's on Twitter at Shakespeare. No, I don't know if he is, but it's nice to see the young people joining in.
I should say as well, if anybody likes the jokes on my tour, they were written by me. If you don't like the gags, they're written by the Earl of Oxford, or Sir Francis Bacon, or Christopher Marlowe. I apologise about the sun, but you do get a bit of a sit down. So if you would like to take a seat, oh, I will stand here. And I'll try and keep the sun out of your eyes as much as possible.
This is good, isn't it? You go up here to my wherever seat. Go to the top, you want to take me?
I don't know if I want to go.
You're on the bottom one, okay. And I'm on the top.
Okay, here we are. At the Royal Shakespeare Company. Now, of course, this is a theatre by royal appointment. And, well, presumably, you still have Queen Elizabeth II on the throne now, yes? Unless something I don't know about. But, presumably, her teeth and her breath are much nicer than Elizabeth I. Oh, and we have a matinee to contend with as well. Oh, it's all go, isn't it, today? Still, a theatre in the centre of town. Had time to change. So, originally, we built our theatre on the south side of the River Thames in Southwark. And we were known as the Lord Chamberlain's Men. And we were administered by a man called James Burbage, with a lot of help and persuasion from our acting company's leading actor, Richard Burbage. Yeah, now I know how it sounds. The producer's son being the leading actor, but no. It was a bit better than that, because Richard was, in fact, the finest actor of his age. He could move an audience to tears just by changing his facial expression. But it never pays to compliment an actor, I should know. So I used to tease him rather than compliment him. And as such, I had great fun when I was writing the play within a play in Hamlet. Especially my view of actors, when I say, suit the action to the word, and the word to the action. Special observance. First, not the modesty of nature, for anything so erdone is from the purpose of playing. In other words, don't overdo it. I mean, talking of Edward Allen at the Rose, I mean, how many times have you seen actors, you know, on stage, legs wide apart, hero stance, whoa, you know, all that sort of stuff going on. It's not necessary. But still, no one ever told Dickie Burbage how to act. Anyway, pardon me, sir, are you laying eggs? anyway, you sir, what was I saying? Blackfriars. Originally, old man Burbage bought a building in Blackfriars, but the vain old fool forgot to get permission to open, so we had to leave that empty. And then in 1596 and 97, the authorities, in their wisdom, decided to make the performance of plays within the city limits illegal. So, being, of course, enterprising young gentlemen, we moved outside the city limits. And, ladies. And, of course, being outside the city, it was rather a wild place, a bit like today.
Yeah.
And we actually had to raise a flag to let the audiences know if we were performing a comedy or a tragedy. And we used to pack them in. I mean, let me tell you, the groundlings. Oh, what a noise and a roar they used to make. Well, presumably some of them only turned up for the bear baiting afterwards, but still bums on seats, as they say, isn't it? actually, talking of the groundlings, you know they can be dreadful to the actors, especially after I've written Macbeth. Has anyone seen Macbeth? No? Oh, yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
You did? Oh, good. Well, you see, originally, my audiences loved the play about the tragic Scottish hero who's driven to murder by his deceitful and domineering. But, perhaps in hindsight, people enjoyed it a little bit too much. Because if they were watching a play that they weren't enjoying, they would start chanting, Macbeth! 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 And you can imagine how much that would have annoyed the actors, and certainly it became almost a cursed word. Indeed, I actually had an argument with the gentleman who was playing Macduff. He actually wanted to change the name of the character in the play from Macbeth to the Scottish villain. Yeah, it's not got the same kind of ring to it, has it? I mean, you can imagine the witches on the heath, you know, where to meet on the heath, there to meet with the Scottish villain. Yeah, it's not a got quite the same ring to it, has it? But actually, it didn't matter at all because the actor broke his leg. I didn't see him again for 6 months. Anyway, yeah, but it wasn't just the workers who came to my plays. There were the rich people as well. Now, the rich, especially the young men, they used to pay to sit directly around the stage. And the young men would sit there in their fine clothes, well, much nicer than mine, shuffling and adjusting themselves and showing off their shapely calves to the ladies. What do you think, ladies? Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, you can come again. But no, the fidgeting used to drive Richard Burbage mad. But then, of course, there were the rich young ladies. Now, the young ladies used to sit up on the balconies, and they used to sit there in their fine dresses with their fans and their little bags of herbs called posies, which would have kept away the smells of sweat and paint and human waste. Beautiful smells you get at the theatre. But then, of course, there was the finest seat in the house. Now, this was directly above the stage. Now, you couldn't really see anything that was going on from there, but that's not the point. Because people didn't just come to the theatre to be entertained. They came to be seen. And I even remember a duke that arrived an hour late for a production of Richard III. Now, believe it or not, he arrived 1 hour late, he stopped the play, and then he got all of the actors to tell him everything that had happened up until that point. Yeah, your face says it all, madam. An hour late. Yeah, have you had that experience yourself? No? Oh, well, I have to say, oh, I wondered if you were there. No, not at all. What a gentleman. But we certainly everybody saw him that night, and as I say, well, that was the point, but I can't really blame him, because I used to enjoy being seen myself. I used to get up on the stage, I used to enjoy playing kingly roles mainly, such as the player king in Hamlet, also Hamlet's father's ghost, that was another one of mine. Well, after all, it did give me the opportunity of taking the Mickey out of Dickie to a certain extent. Actually, talking of taking the Mickey out of Richard Burbage, a young lady had seen him in Richard III playing the title role, and she rather liked the look of him. So she decided she was going to invite him back to her place for a little dinner. So she invited him with a note, sent him backstage, with a servant. And I was standing in the wings, and I received the note, and I thought, you know what, this is typical. I never get a chance to go anywhere. No, I'm the playwright, no one ever invites me out. So I thought, right, I went to the costume department, I stole the Richard III costume, I went round to the young lady's house, did my finest Richard Burbage impersonation, and had a wonderful evening and a lovely dinner with the young lady. Yeah. Unfortunately, at the end of the evening, another servant arrived with another note saying that Richard III was downstairs for his dinner with the young lady. He was waiting there, dinner there rather a long time, and he was a little bit annoyed. So I thought, right, and I turned the piece of paper over very quickly, and I scribbled down on the back, tough luck, William the Conqueror came before Richard III. snuck out the back way. But still, he did forgive me, we were rather good friends. But I knew it was time to return to Stratford. When I overheard two cockneys in the street talking to each other in London. And the first one turned to the second and he said, "Yeah, have you read Shakespeare?" And the second turned to the first and he went, "Ooh, I don't know, who wrote it?" At that point I thought to myself I would give anything to be in an alehouse in Stratford. So I came home and opened one. That's another story. No, I came home and I bought my dream home.
Okay, we're going to finish for now and I'll be back with you. Shortly.